I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Emma Johnson. She is the Climate Science Fellow at the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting and also a Davidson College graduate. Emma, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Matt. Really happy to be here.
So your reporting has looked at the trout industry here in Western North Carolina. So just to begin to start this interview off, tell us what you looked at. Tell us how big the trout industry is in Western North Carolina, certainly in comparison to other parts of the country, and what you begin to look at as part of the industry facing a couple different crises right now: climate change, which existed long before we heard of COVID-19, and then COVID-19 itself.
Yeah, so the trout industry in North Carolina is an enormous business for the state. Just the western part of the region, which is where mountain trout live and are stocked, it in 2014 was estimated to be worth $383 million. And that number is definitely higher now, especially after 2020 and the coronavirus pandemic first hit. So it is an enormous industry for the state. And I was really looking at how climate change affects multiple parts of this industry. So I was looking at the people who are raising trout to stock rivers and ponds for sport fishing. So that's looking at the state hatcheries for the Wildlife Resource Commission, who are stocking a lot of waters in the western part of the state for people to fish. I was also looking at the eastern band of the Cherokee Indians, who have a hatchery to stock the waters on their land, and then as well as many of the smaller private farms that exist that stock their own ponds for people to come and fish. So I was looking at the sport fishing industry, and then there is a whole nother section of the trout industry with farms where people are raising fish to sell to restaurants and retailers, such as restaurants all across the United States and grocery stores. Examples, Sunburst Trout Farms or Carolina Mountain. And then the third part is all the people who work in trout in other ways. So guides, fly fishing guides, people who take people out onto the water to catch trout, any other folks who work in outdoor recreation who make their living with tourism, where people want to come and fish. And so I was looking at all the different parts of this industry and how climate change is really changing a lot of aspects of their lives.
So let's get into that. First, we'll talk about prior to March of last year, how much had climate change begun to affect this industry that is very vital to this region and is a drawing card, not just for the people who work here, but it is also a destination point, like so many things in Western North Carolina, for people to come and visit to take part in.
Yeah, climate change is a really interesting topic when we're discussing Western North Carolina. I think it came up in my reporting a lot how people actually viewed Western North Carolina as a place that was pretty immune to some of the worst effects of climate change, actually. So especially when you're looking at rising sea levels on the coast or extreme wildfires that are happening out west, Western North Carolina doesn't really have a lot of those extreme weather events in the same way. But it would be a mistake to think that climate change isn't happening in the region, because as we know, it's happening all across the country. And in Western North Carolina, what it really is going to mean for the state is more days a year that are hotter. It's going to mean more intense storms, more rain, more precipitation as a whole, likely less snow. And so all of these things are going to add together to actually make it much more difficult for trout to survive in a lot of different ways. So trout are a fish that can only survive in cold, clear water. And when it's not cold and clear and full of oxygen, they get stressed. And in the ways that people get stressed when we're not eating well or have a lack of sleep, in ways that is damaging to our immune systems, trout feel the same way. So if it's too hot in the waters, they get stressed, and they are actually more prone to disease, are not as resilient to change, and can die because of it. So there are lots of different ways that the climate crisis is affecting trout, and it's all these different effects that climate change is predicted to bring to the state does not really bode well for the trout as a whole.
Right. Your reporting cites a report from last year from the State Institute for Climate Science that says in 40 years, by the year 2060, Western North Carolina will see 10 to 20 more days a year where temperatures are above 90 degrees, and that by at that same time, the annual hottest and coldest temperatures will increase 3 to 5 degrees. So you mentioned it there, how this is bad for trout because they thrive in colder waters. So one of the places you went to was Sunburst Trout Farms, one of the places you reported at, and that is in Haywood County. Their flagship farm is below Lake Logan in Haywood County. So tell us about what you found out there.
Yeah, Sunburst was a really fascinating place because in so many ways, they are such a sustainable business. You know, they are pulling water out of the lake, out of the bottom third of the lake, which is usually colder and doesn't have the same temperature fluctuations that you may be able to see at the top of the lake. And, you know, they return the water to the river after they use it. But there's a lot of times when that farm that they have below Lake Logan is just not the most suitable conditions for trout. And when you're growing trout, even a few degrees change in the water temperature makes all the difference. You know, trout ideally thrive at around 58, 60 degrees Fahrenheit. So the small differences in water temperature make a huge impact on the productivity efficiency of a farm. So if you're thinking, the difference between 67 degrees and 70 degrees of the water could mean the difference between life and death for the fish that you have. And so what they saw at Sunburst is in the summer, sometimes it would, even though they're pulling water from the bottom third of the lake, it can still be too warm to have as good of production of trout as they would like to fulfill all their supply needs. And so one thing that Sunburst is doing is actually leasing out multiple farms in addition to their main farm that are with properties at different elevations, so they can actually be trying to chase that coldest water. So they've leased a farm that's further up in the mountains than their property at Lake Logan, which they can use primarily during the summer months when it may become too warm to produce enough fish or really sustain the numbers of fish they need during the summer at their main farm. So even though in a lot of ways it's a really sustainable operation over at Sunburst, they're still being affected by changes in the climate that can be really hard to control. And, you know, they're always looking at different ways that they can address that.
You also focused on the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, and you spoke to their tribal hatchery supervisor and talked to some of the hatchery, went to some of the hatchery facilities and to see what was going on at those places. So tell us what those hatchery facilities are first, and then what you've discovered there.
Yeah, so the Eastern Band of the Cherokee Indians runs one hatchery to support the stocking of their rivers and streams. And it is an incredibly important business for the Eastern Band. So the fishing industry, they've estimated, is valued at about $25 million, which makes it the second largest single industry for the Eastern Band, second only to the casino business. And so it makes fishing incredibly important. And it's not just important for the economics, it's also so important for Cherokee culture and traditions and community building. So it is really such an important business for the Cherokee. And because it's so important, and because they only have one facility right now, it's really critical that they're able to produce the amount of fish that they need in order to stock their streams and rivers, because this money is coming from fishing permits that people buy to come and fish on their waters. So if a huge disaster strikes and they're not able to stock the rivers and ponds on Cherokee land, that will be an enormous hit because people likely won't be coming to buy fishing permits. So, you know, I think an example of when that really hit Cherokee was in the summer and fall of 2016, when, you know, of course, there were enormous fires over in Tennessee, but it was also a year of enormous drought for the Western North Carolina region. So, you know, across the entire region, there's far less rain than usual. Most parts of the region were seeing 6 inches less of rain than they usually would. Asheville was having its driest autumn in 123 years of recorded data history. So it was an incredibly dry fall. And what that means for trout is, or what it meant for the Eastern Band, is the water, the river where they pull water from for their hatchery, was running so low that they weren't able to divert enough water from the river to supply all of the raceways that are in the hatchery. So they ended up having to close 40% of their channels, which cost them thousands of fish. And it was also, because the water level was so low, the temperatures were also climbing in the river itself, which, as I mentioned before, stresses fish out. Can be really bad for them. One of the hatchery managers I talked to was describing how he was watching trout just die right there in the river because the water level was so low and the water was so warm. And, you know, he and other folks at Cherokee had never seen anything like that. And the hardest part about this, with this loss, is that trout are also a slow growing fish. So it takes over a year to grow a trout from an egg or a small fish to what's considered, you know, market size or stocking size, which is about 1 pound. And so if you lose thousands of fish in an autumn, it takes an incredibly long time to build that back up. And, you know, for the Cherokee, who the Eastern Band, who need trout in order to make an enormous part of their income for the tribe in order to remain independent, it can be incredibly devastating when something like that happens.
So let's say the water temperatures go to these levels over the next 40 years. What's going to happen to the trout, and then what's going to happen to the industry itself?
Yeah, I think it's going to require a lot of flexibility from the industry to figure out how to adapt to these different changes. You know, I think a lot of the rivers that are stocked right now all across Western North Carolina, most of them tend to be at lower elevations. So it's going to be work from the scientists and other folks stocking to see what rivers are going to be able to sustain trout populations, whether it's just for stocking purposes or for wild purposes. Because even if you're stocking trout, which, you know, usually maybe they're just in there for a week at most because people come and fish them, but if the waters are so warm that when you put trout in, they die right away, I mean, that is going to be good for nobody. So it will probably require a shifting of what waters can be stocked for trout. On the hatchery side, for people who are farming and raising trout, you know, I think it's going to take some advancements in hatchery technology to assess what can be done to protect the fish while they're growing in the raceways. Because it's a pretty confined environment as the fish are growing in these channels, and they have to be there, as I said, a long time to get from, you know, small fingerling size to 1 pound fish. So I think advances such as alarm systems when water level may be getting low, so that hatchery managers can come close gates and recirculate water until conditions improve, or even things as simple as adding shading so that the direct sun isn't hitting trout. All of those little things to even lower temperature water temperatures just a few degrees will make all the difference in the world when it comes to raising trout. I think looking at the wild trout side, especially for the brook trout, which is Western North Carolina's only native trout species, it will be critical to do other things to protect the habitats where they live. You know, so even though temperatures are predicted to rise in the region, it doesn't necessarily mean that water temperatures have to soar along with that, you know. So things like canopy cover over rivers is incredibly important. Improving stream bakes, all of these things that help improve trout habitat will also help them be more resilient to warming temperatures.
So this time last year, we knew the crisis that was climate change and the impact it was having on our region and our world. Then COVID-19 started to show up in the United States around this time. So what impact has COVID-19 had on the trout industry in Western North Carolina? It's not maybe as clear as what you just were able to paint for all of us with the impact climate change is having on the fish. What impact is COVID-19 having on the fish?
It's been, I think, a really interesting year when I was looking at the impacts of COVID-19, because I was expecting going into this that it would have been negative for the trout industry all around. But in fact, when I talked to a lot of people who work on the outdoor recreation side of things, so anybody who's working in the sport fishing part of this industry, any of the fishing guides, they were all talking about how it was their busiest year ever. And so really, we're seeing people from all across North Carolina, all over the country, were coming to Western North Carolina to get outside. You know, I think one of the biggest things we saw last year was how important outdoor spaces are and how much people value the opportunities to get outdoors. And especially as people were working remotely, a lot of people, I think, were coming to Western North Carolina in order to do that and taking advantage of what we know are incredible outdoor spaces to get outside and recreate in. And one of the things that people were doing was going fishing. So a lot of people I talked to were saying that they had seen their highest permit sales, highest fishing permit sales that they'd ever seen. They, you know, fishing guides were talking about how they were booked up, you know, for months in advance. So a lot of people actually had a really great year business-wise when it came to trout fishing. But on the opposite side of that, for the farms that are working and selling to restaurants and retailers, they definitely took a big hit during this time. So Sunburst Trout Farms, again, as an example, you know, their primary people that they're selling to are people in the restaurant business. And, you know, Wes, one of the sources who I talked to, talked with me about how there's some restaurants that he hasn't sold a piece of fish to since March, you know, because the restaurants just aren't opening. And, you know, they've definitely taken a huge hit to their sales. And, you know, especially as indoor dining in the capacities that we saw in the past are still a long ways off into returning to what we saw, you know, they're not expecting to get back to pre-pandemic levels of sales until that happens. So it could, you know, still be years for them before they recover from the hits they've taken. So it's actually been some pretty extremely opposing differences in how different parts of the trout industry have responded to COVID-19.
Might there be a lasting impact from COVID-19 on trout and the industry here? You mentioned a lot of people visiting here, coming to as tourists, as they always seem to do, and that was very popular, obviously, in the last year. I saw more people moving to the area, too, sort of as a way to get away from larger areas where they may have felt that the transmission of the virus was more possible. So is there a long-term impact on the industry from what has happened and the trout? Is there going to be a long-term impact from COVID-19 on both?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question because, you know, I think it's could go in a lot of different ways. I think that the interest in outdoor recreation is not going to go away. I think now that boom, that push has happened, and I saw a lot of people coming out onto the water, I think that's only going to keep growing, especially if the transition to remote work becomes more permanent and other people just realize what the opportunities are to do outdoor recreation in Western North Carolina. I think that's only going to keep growing. And in a lot of ways, that's really good for the region because it brings in a lot of money. It brings in people who boost up tourism. You know, I would say for looking again at the Eastern Band, you know, that additional increase in people coming for tourism, it will be really great for their economy. But I think on the opposing side of that, and then connecting back to climate change, it also just puts more pressure on the hatcheries who are raising trout to stock to be able to do that effectively. So if you're looking at the Eastern Band, who at the moment only have one hatchery, you know, if another disaster like the 2016 droughts come again, and there's all this even greater interest and pressure for people to want to come and fish on Eastern Band lands, I think that would be then an even greater disaster for them just because there is so much interest and pressure on that industry. So thinking about ways that the hatcheries can continue to be resilient against environmental change will be incredibly important as they continue to support this growing industry that definitely has been fueled by COVID-19.
Well, terrific. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think you know, one thing that really struck me when I was doing this reporting is, you know, I was looking at trout mostly at how it was connecting to people's livelihoods, thinking about jobs and the economy in the sense of what it's doing for the state or for the region or for like for the Eastern Band, for a group of people. But one of the things that really struck me when I talked to a lot of sources is what trout means to people on a personal level. And I thought that was just so moving and meaningful. So, you know, a lot of people talked to me about the memories with their grandparents or their parents who took them out onto the river for the first time to fish and what it meant to them to be able to do that. A lot of folks also talked with me about seeing trout as a way to value the environment and conservation of these natural spaces. As I mentioned before, you know, trout can only live in cold, clear waters. And so having trout in a river is a really good indication of a healthy stream, a healthy ecosystem, because it means that it's cold enough to support trout. It's healthy enough to support the animals that trout feed on. It's, you know, clear water. And so a lot of people also talked about the beauty of getting out into beautiful spaces and to enjoy the natural environment and conservation and just valuing the world around them. You know, especially also talking to folks at the Eastern Band, you know, I heard a lot about how important trout are for community building amongst tribal members, especially intergenerational community building and caring for those who aren't able to come out to the river by bringing them fish, and just the importance of fish to the Cherokee peoples for centuries now. And so it was really fascinating and heartwarming to learn how important trout are for making memories and community building and conservation and all these other things that are more than the job, but really matter to why people are doing this work. And I think, you know, makes it even more important that people are taking steps to protect trout and thinking about ways to make trout farms and the trout industry as a whole resilient to climate change and doing what's possible, because, you know, they mean so much more to people, more than just the jobs. And, you know, I think it really is just an incredible animal for the mountain region of Western North Carolina.
Well, great. How can people read your reporting?
So as you mentioned earlier, I am a climate science fellow with the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. So you can read my reporting on the Pulitzer Center's website and hopefully soon a piece in the Carolina Public Press.
Great, Emma. Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks, Matt. I really enjoyed being on.